From the studios in the Communication Arts and Sciences Building on the campus of Michigan State University, this is MSU Today. MSU Today is a lively look at MSU-related people, places, events, and attitudes put into focus by Russ White.
Thank you, Lynn. At 6 past 4 following news, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis talk with Spartan football players Riley Bulla and R.J. Shelton. Kirk Heinze talks with MSU Provost June Hewitt about how MSU is imbuing sustainability throughout its curriculum. It's MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR, and we get started at 4:06. This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis welcome MSU football players Riley Bulla and R.J. Shelton to the program. Here's President Simon.
So we're really pleased to have Riley Bulla and R.J. Shelton with us today. This is our annual conversation of two Spartans who are expected to be leaders in next year's Spartan football team. And don't ask me how you were picked. You can talk to your athletic director about that, but you were chosen to do this. And so when you think about your experience at Michigan State, what's been the highlight for you of the experience? Not necessarily of football, but of the experience. So this is a tough question. Then we'll move on to football.
Well, I think it's easy for me. It's just the relationships that I've gained throughout my time here. You know, when I was in high school, my older brother Max was here. He's 2 years older than me. I got to know all his friends, meet a lot of people. So coming here really, you know, was the only option for me. So just being here now, meeting all the people that I've met, the coaches, and all that, and building those relationships and being able to, you know, sustain those relationships after college is really, you know, what's sticking out to me now as I come into my senior year.
You know, I'd say the same thing, you know, along with Riley. The relationships that you build here, you know, are grade A with the coaching staff and everything, and the guys that came here previously and obviously now. So obviously with me not being forced here, so I was from Wisconsin, would more be for me if I had to go to Wisconsin, I'd have to go there. But, you know, with me, it was just something about Michigan State that caught my eye, you know, and just the loyalty with the program, just the people that, you know, that make Michigan State what it is. So that's what really made me come here. And obviously I'm here today.
It's been fun to get to know your families.
Yep.
Yes, it has.
Very much a part of the Spartan tradition, are not simply because you got an older brother here, but I think the program, the university, has embraced your families.
I think there's two families here that are very passionate but very different backgrounds.
Yeah.
You know, Riley, of course, has decades and decades of connectivity, and I don't think there's probably a stronger Spartan than your mom.
Yeah. I think if you haven't met RJ's mom, you're missing out.
Right.
She is an extraordinary woman.
Yeah,
and I know that she would rather have us throw the ball to him than run that sweep.
Probably. She would give her sense into that.
Right. She's been very vocal about that option.
Right. Very, very vocal.
Which she should be.
Except when he breaks it, she cheers loudly.
Exactly. she's funny.
One of the things I stress on is, you know, when I walk into Keep It Real Monday, you ask for a raise of hands of how many plan on playing in the NFL, and those freshmen, almost every hand goes up, which you want those goals and you want that achievement. Even if you make the NFL, the average length of a career there is relatively short when you look at a full lifetime. Is the hope of how do you tell a high school student, how do you tell a college student to really grasp onto the educational side of it and the opportunities you're getting with being a student athlete in order to have an amazing life?
Well, you know, for me, I kind of get a firsthand look of what the NFL is like. You know, Max being with the Texans right now, I actually talked with him last night about how tough it's been for him to climb the ladder to get to that spot where you can be on the field and get the coaches to respect you enough to allow you to play. So that really just put it into perspective for me that, you know, all the academic stuff we get here, all the connections we make, are extremely important because, you know, football doesn't last forever. Obviously, we all have high hopes coming in. I think that pushes us to work hard, which I think is a good thing. But at the same time, you need to understand, you know, the relationships, the academics, everything you learn while you're here is what's going to carry you through the rest of your life. And even after, you know, 2 or 3 years of playing in the NFL, if you're fortunate enough, you need to come back to the background that you gained here through academics. So I think just talking to high schoolers about our experience, maybe some older guys' experiences, and letting them know how it actually is and how the NFL, you know, kind of happens and how hard it is to make it, I think is really important.
You know, it's important, you know, coming where I'm from to get your education. You know, when you get in the real world, it's real. And, you know, you want to use all your resources that you gain from here, get your degree, you know. And I look at, you know, if I would tell anyone, you know, look at the NFL as an opportunity. You know, you got to work, you know, you work like you get here, you know, from high school to college, it'd be the same thing. But, you know, it's very slim, but, you know, you want to make sure that you, you know, have that diploma because no one can take that away from you.
How do you think, and this is going to be a tough question, I'm going to start with you, but how do you think intercollegiate athletics and universities could do a better job, if possible, in developing student-athletes within, I mean, we have about 800 student-athletes on a campus with 50,000 students, and yet we very much want the highs of being a student-athlete, but also the integration of being a student on campus and getting that experience. How do you think, what are some things that you would advise nationally that could be done to improve?
You know, that's a tough question. But, you know, I think what we do here is very good. I'm connected with a lot of people outside of the building. You know, going to class every day, meeting new faces, you know, kind of, because they don't know really kind of what we go through, kind of just talking about, you know, what we go through and what they go through, kind of just talk about that. But I really think that, you know, what we're doing right now is great, is top A.
Yeah, one thing that stuck out in my mind is whenever you can bring older guys back that have been through the program, that have been through the process, that have been out of college for a few years, whenever you can bring those people back and have them talk to us about their experience after college specifically, I think those, when we've done that, that's what's really helped me out and kind of put things in perspective. So I would just say, you know, if universities can do that more and more, then it would be beneficial.
We had a unique situation in playing in the Cotton Bowl in back-to-back years. And if you set the games aside, both games aside, was the experience going to Dallas different, the same? Did you feel what was your perspective or your walk away as far as a season ending celebration, I guess, to a year
I think, you know, we went to the Cotton Bowl for when we played at Baylor a couple years ago. It was an awesome experience just because the Cotton Bowl people put on such a tremendous trip for us and being able to see that stadium for the first time. You know, when we first walked in, it was just kind of eye-opening. Like I like to say it was kind of more like a like an entertainment feel. Like we were there for an entertainment in this huge stadium, meeting all these people, seeing the cheerleaders. And then the second time we went this year, it felt a lot more like a business trip. Cause we'd been there before, we'd seen everything that we were going to see. So it was a little bit of a different feel, and obviously we were in the playoff. So those stakes were a little bit higher. But it just, both experiences were a lot of fun. Wish the outcome could have been a little different this year, but at the same time, we learned a lot about, you know, our team, learned a lot about, you know, where we need to take this program to, you know, that next level that we always talk about. But, you know, overall, just, you know, two great experiences.
RJ, do you think, if you had the same opinion, do you think some of that had to do with you didn't know what was coming next?
Maybe, I'm not saying game-wise, but, you know, being there the first year against Baylor and coming in against Alabama, you know, for me, it wasn't a difference. You know, obviously the first time playing in Cowboys Stadium was unreal. And obviously what Riley said coming back, you know, it was more like a business trip. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, the outcome, I'm not reiterating what he said, but the outcome, we obviously didn't want it to be what happened. But, you know, now we know kind of, you know, what to expect, where we need to get the program to the next level and maintain that. You know, it maybe be more preparation more for that. But, you know, it wasn't, for me, playing-wise, it wasn't really different.
See, from myself and for the administration, there was a great difference, and I think it came down to when we played Baylor, the year we played Baylor, you knew that when you played that game, the season was over.
Right.
And we were going to fly home, and this past year, you didn't know.
Right.
You had a game, you had uncertainty. And for me, that changed the tone kind of what went into that week because of that uncertainty. Mm-hmm. It's another component of adversity that
right.
when we get back there, it's how do we deal with that in different ways as administrators, you know, student
athletes.
Yeah,
it was different. One thing that, you know, that whole week we were down there, I was getting texts from people saying, like, I can't make it to this game, but I already booked my tickets to Arizona.
Right,
I'm like,
right.
that just kind of, you know, that kind of messed with your mind a little bit. You try to, you know, not affect you, but I mean, it does. You're like, but we have this game first and we're playing Alabama.
Right.
So you guys need to understand that. This is a huge game. And
right.
talking about the next week was, you know, it was a little weird, to be honest.
We also worried a bit about the senior send-off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there are certain traditions that you
yeah.
all have.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, too.
And so tell us about how you would, you know, so we're back in the playoffs this year, so how would you like to handle it differently?
well, obviously, I mean, you don't want to have the mindset of where it's an end-all, be-all. You know, we got to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, you want to work towards a bigger goal and wait for it. I mean, obviously, our seniors did a lot for us, you know, this past year, and, you know, credit them a ton, but you know, I wouldn't, if for my last year, obviously being my senior, I would have done it the same way.
Okay.
I wouldn't have changed it because to me, that kind of just shows that, you know, we're kind of just, you know, just letting it happen. You know, like it's kind of like the end all be all. And, you know, when you get to that type of stage, you don't want to have that at all. You want everyone clicking and, you know, going to that next game. So, I mean, it's to me, it's going to happen again.
Okay.
You know, I want it the same way
okay.
as, you know, as we had it.
Yeah, I just think. No. I was just going to say, yeah, because we do have this one tradition that came to my mind. The last practice that we have of the year before the bowl game, the whole team lines up except for the seniors, and they come through.
Mm-hmm.
We shake their hands, exchange words
yeah.
like that. And it seems like a little thing, but when it's happening, it really hits you hard because mm-hmm. you're not going to see these guys, some of them, you know, for a long time. So that's one thing that we didn't do this year because we wanted to think that we were going to make it to the next week.
Yeah.
Like I feel is the right thing to do, but you know, it was just different approaching that game than in years past.
So let's jump to the future. Let's transition into next season in the mindset of where the team is, where you are, stepping into, you know, even a stronger leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
How it's going to be carried into the 2016 season.
Right. Well, right now, this phase of the off season, our winter conditioning is just kind of, you know, who are the tough guys, who can make it through the workouts and not say they have an injury, they got to go on the bike, or, you know, they're bending over when they're running. You know, you just see who the tough guys are. I mean, that's what we focus on, so that's where we're at right now. And I would say we have a lot of leadership coming back, so I'm excited about that. But definitely some younger guys that are going to need to step up, which we're going to have to see in spring ball. We have some injuries, so there will be some younger guys playing. I'm in the spring, but, you know, overall, I'm excited.
Yeah, same here. Excited, you know, for the challenge and the opportunity, you know, to match what we did last year. You know, we got a lot of talent coming in, a lot of talent that's there. You know, we just got to, you know, work on our craft as a team, make sure that, you know, we're on our P's and Q's because, you know, this season has a lot, you know, for us to get. And, you know, with me being my senior, I just want to make sure, you know, I'm doing what I need to do so this team gets to the right, you know, back to where we were in the playoffs, back to winning Big Ten championships, back to winning the East. So, you know, we have a lot of hard work, you know, ahead of us. Obviously, it was winter conditioning, spring ball, and then coming the summer, and then all of a sudden, here's fall. So, and we got a lot of guys that, you know, are ready to work and ready to make an impact on the team.
The idea of having to reset every year, particularly when you're successful,
mm-hmm.
does it get harder or easier?
For us, you know, probably for as players, I think, you know, we're immune to it. You know, it's restarting, but we know we have to work continuously day in, day out, you know, week in, week out, month in, month out. But we like the challenge as well. If any competitor, if you like a challenge, you know, you like to prove people wrong. So, you know, the guys that left, you know, I'm pretty sure probably people are wondering, you know, what are they going to do now that Connor's gone? What are they going to do now that the defensive line's gone? What are they going to do now that the wide receiver, you know, Aaron Burbage is gone? You know, so that's just another challenge that, you know, obviously those particular positions are going to take into their own hands. So I'm just excited, and I know our team's excited to fulfill our dreams and to take those roles on, you know, headstrong.
Yeah, I would say, not to jump in, but, you know, after each bowl game, the seniors leave. And, you know, I'm my fifth year now, so I've been around some guys. So I would try to, you know, I would say, like RJ said, you want to be immune to it, but at the same time, it is tough. Not just because you're losing teammates, but you're losing some of your best friends, you know, after they leave. I know when Max left and their class left, it was tough for me at first. And then this last class, a lot of my best friends were leaving. So we have a team meeting in the beginning of January without the seniors there. And it's just eye-opening that you're not going to see those people. So from that aspect, I would say that's where it's tough. But, you know, football-wise, you get guys to step up. And once you get into practice and things like that, just, you know, it just keeps rolling.
But it's really a transition from you being the student to you being the teacher. I mean,
right.
It's that's where the leadership role comes into this, is as you see friends go that hopefully are going to continue to be friends. And I think we have a culture where everybody wants to come back. Mm-hmm. You are now the ones that are setting the tone for those that are coming on board today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great thing.
Yeah. You know, last year was my first year as a true starter, being out there every play. So before that, I was, you know, I was the student, like you said. But, you know, this past season, I think I really, you know, found myself teaching other guys things, not just linebackers, but the D-line, secondary. Right. And now my fifth year, you know, that's where I really want to improve and be kind of like a coach on the field, you know, like they say.
As you, RJ, as you step away, going into your senior year, you're going to be gone. Outside the football building, who are you going to look back and say, and there's probably many, but who's had an impact on your life that you're going to want to stay in touch with, going to miss not being on campus every day with?
You know, that's a tough question. You know, I was going to say that someone that was in the building, but, you know, I have to say Brad Salem. You know, he's the one that brought me here. Mm-hmm. He's the one that, you know, brought an eye to me in Michigan State because he recruits Wisconsin. So, you know, without him coming to Wisconsin, you know, finding me or, you know, however it went, I wouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. I would have known nothing about Michigan State. I wouldn't know nothing about the, you know, the history here, you know, the family here that you guys have built, you know, the opportunities that we have, you know, as student athletes here that are grade A. You know, I would never be, you know, invited or even, you know, seen to be here. But and I have to say him. I mean, he's someone that I talk to on a day-to-day basis. You know, someone that I can go to if it's tough times or if it's just someone that I need to talk to about something.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer.
Basically, just life occurrences in general.
So he's your life coach, not just a position coach.
Right, not just a position coach. You know, and that's the thing that literally catches my eye, you know, with just who we have in the building right now here at Michigan State. It's more than just football. You know, and I think that's what you guys have built here. And obviously with, you know, with being with school, going to school here, excuse me, and everything, it's just, you know, it's like, wow, you know, to me and just seeing the people that are here, you know, that care about you and want you to be successful going down the road.
My guy was Judd Heathcote. So some 32 years later,
right.
I'm still talking to him.
Right. I'm pretty sure I'll still talk to him as well.
Yeah, so. I would say for me, it's definitely Mandy Chandler, my academic advisor. We always say she's our mom away from home. Because I would say she probably, when I go in there, we probably talk school maybe 20% of the time, and the other 80% is, you know, just life, or, you know, how things are going, and, you know, how to move forward certain situations. You know, I try to do my best in school, but sometimes, like, you know, I'm not on top of my studies like I should be, and she always brings me back. She, when I tell you, she has every person's schedule memorized, and she's in charge of I don't know how many people, but it's really amazing. And she's really helped me out, you know, in my time here.
But she listens to you about your life and in that process. Yeah, that's great.
So assuming that you might have a pro career, you might not. But so 10 years from now, let me pick 10 years from now. What do you want to be doing? I mean, because that would be mostly around well past the average of an NFL, you know, a typical NFL player. So that's why I picked the sort of the 10-year.
I knew this question was coming.
Okay, whatever it's going to be 10 years from now, what do you want to be doing?
You know what's interesting, that process, to give you time to think about it? I had an opportunity to spend time with the Manning family, and, of course, Peyton's going through that process right now. And it's
What do I do, Coach?
Even there, it's right. You know, it's a situation where he tried to prepare for that by writing letters to every NFL player that retired. Mm-hmm. And he said he sent one to Brett Favre, and he had to cross out the date six times before he sent it forward. But it's there comes a time, you know, whether it's in high school in my case or when you're done, it's good to think about it. Yeah. It's good to think about, you know, what's meaningful to you.
Yeah. You know, my major here is media and information, which is TV, radio stuff. So I love doing stuff like this. I love working in the studios here. So I could definitely, you know, see myself doing something in that. It's just hard to say because I don't know exactly. I don't know about everything that's out there until I'm out there, I guess.
But broadly media.
And then on the other side, one of my main passions is working out. And I know some people that work for some pretty big gyms throughout the country, Chicago, Miami. Yeah. So I've reached out to them about, you know, opportunities. So just trying to keep everything open right now. Focus on my academics, have the greatest season I can have, and then we'll go from there.
You also spend a lot of time volunteering.
Mm-hmm. So
you see that being a part of your future as well?
Influencing people, I think, is what I like to do. That's why I kind of thought of the working out part of it, helping people, get in shape, things like that.
I realized
I like doing that ever since I got to college, and when you go help people out, they really look up to you.
Yeah.
With something.
Bad guy on the bike.
I don't show up over there. Ken reminds me every time I see him in church that he hasn't seen me.
Yeah, that's funny.
For me, obviously, my education here is advertising, so kind of more of the business side. For me, I just like to, help others. Probably don't know what job I will be in at that point, but, promoting, raising money for someone or something, and just being a light to the world and, helping people in need, that's my forte kind of. So,
'cause you've done a lot of volunteering.
Right, a lot of volunteering, right, reaching out with people. Yeah. The funny thing is, I just did a Flint thing, the water crisis, and I gave the money to Daryl Holmes and his family. So just little things like that, that can turn into big things. So, that's basically kind of my focus right now, and just networking and things like that. So I can see myself getting in some type of job field in advertising or working out or something like that. That or even possibly coaching or. Seeing what our coaches go through. I mean, they go through a lot of hours, but, I love the game of football and, I love sports in general. So anything in that type of field would fit me.
You both have sort of worked with children mm-hmm. around sport in various ways to try to give them role models. Mm-hmm. What's that meant to you to be that role model?
Yeah, it means a lot. Like I said, when I got to college or even high school, we had a big following of all the little kids in our schools and we'd have camps. And we still have camps now. So whenever you can see when you influence someone directly, especially a little kid, that means a lot. What comes to mind kind of outside of football a little bit is when we were in Dallas and we went to the hospital and you talk to the kids. And you're not always talking about football. You're talking to them about their lives and what they're going through and with their parents. So when you can step out of the realm of football, too, and just talk about life, is something I enjoy, too.
Yeah. I've seen you with some little kids.
Around,
you seem to be sort of a kid magnet in some sense terms of being around you and wanting to sort of reach down
I love to help kids out, influence, be a role model to them. When I go back home, it's 15,000 people and every person in Beaver Dam knows who I am. So regardless if it's going to a game, I was once a kid that someone would come in, I was at a university, like, oh man, he's here, such and such is here. And now for me to kind of be in that situation is awesome to really, be a light to people, just to show people that there's a way, that if you just work, and do the right things and take schooling serious, that you can, make a light to yourself and a light to your life and, make a way for yourself. So, I just love, working with kids. I love doing the clinics that we do here. Mm-hmm. Before the spring game,
I watched you on the sideline, so I know that you just light up when you're around those children.
It's you know, it's something that I, you know, I like to do. I like to make light of people, especially little kids, because like I said before, I was once that little guy that wanted to talk to the football players or talk to the basketball player or talk to someone that was at that higher level. So, you know, I just try to be a light to people.
Well, I think you survived the interview. It's all been good, and it's tell the guys next year that it's terrifying.
So, yeah. They don't have to edit out too much.
No, no, you guys are fantastic.
Not that bad.
We're good.
Thanks to you both.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
That was a conversation between Spartan football players Riley Bulla and R.J. Shelton, Michigan State University President Luana K. Simon, and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
Fight, fight, fight.
You're tuned to Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Kirk Heinze.
Well, we've featured a number of academic faculty and students at Michigan State University who are deeply engaged in teaching and research and outreach programs with a sustainability focus. But to give us a more complete picture, who better than MSU's chief academic officer, Dr. June Hewitt, who is the provost of Michigan State University. Dr. Hewitt, a pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you.
First of all, people hear the word provost a lot outside of academia, and that people wonder, what's that? I mentioned chief academic officer, but maybe you can elaborate a little bit on what does a provost do, especially at Michigan State University?
Well, a provost has responsibility for all academic activity. So the hiring of all deans, the approval of all curricula, after the faculty have proposed it, of course, and any of the other academic initiatives. That includes supporting the research efforts of our faculty, making sure they have the resources, the facilities, the startup money and equipment they need. So virtually anything that people think about as the work of Michigan State University is under the purview of the provost.
And I think it's fair to, I think it's appropriate to mention that our president, Luana K. Simon, served in that capacity once upon a time.
Yes, quite a role model, right, to follow President Simon. But many of the really excellent programs we have in place, the trends, the trajectory really can be linked back to her days as provost.
Well, and some other ones that are going on now that can directly be linked to your tenure in office. And let's talk a little bit about one that we have mentioned on this program, and that's this whole sustainability focus in academic programs. I could say in research and outreach, too, but let's talk for a moment about academic programs. Is this a trend that has been emerging recently, or does this go back?
Well, I think we've always had, particularly at Michigan State University, I think we've always had students who are interested in these kinds of topics because we've been a place that always attracted students who are keenly interested in natural resources and in agriculture, food, water, environment. And that lends itself to conversations about how we take care of those things and how we sustain them. But I think we've really seen a growth in this area in the last few years in students who wouldn't have necessarily identified themselves as being interested in those areas. And again, I think Michigan State is a fairly natural place for that kind of growth and development to happen. I'm sure one of the things you've talked about, as you've talked about research before, is that we have real opportunities here to do interdisciplinary work.
Right.
Always been a place where faculty felt comfortable approaching each other with big ideas, and we've tried sort of bureaucratically to keep the barriers low so that folks could figure out ways to work across departments, across colleges, frankly, across institutions and countries. So that's the kind of fertile ground that these kinds of interdisciplinary programs grow.
Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest changes during my time at Michigan State was to move from maybe more of a disciplinary focus to a real emphasis on working across disciplines. So now it's almost the norm when we interview young faculty on this program who are maybe appointed in two or three different departments who are working with colleagues all across the gamut of disciplines.
It is, in fact, I think one of the reasons we're able to attract really fine faculty because they understand that they won't be in one place. That they really have the flexibility to take their ideas across the boundaries.
Now, Dr. Hewitt, in terms of, you spend a lot of time with students, and
I do, and
you have worked with students throughout your career, and you've been very passionate about undergraduate education. Have you noticed a change in the last 10 or 15 years when it comes to student perceptions of this whole business of sustainability, climate change, some of the major issues that we read about in the media all the time?
Well, I have, and I think it's linked to some of the changes I've seen in students generally over my 30-something years. We still have students who are very career-oriented, who are very ambitious, but this generation of students comes to us looking for more. They typically have done some sort of service in high school. They've been in communities. They've done experiential education. They haven't just sat in desks in rows. Their understandings haven't been confined to what one teacher in the front of the room said. The Internet of Everything has touched their lives. This generation has never lived in a time when they couldn't ask Mr. Google. And so it really does mean that they're looking for a much broader experience and asking bigger questions. Even those who come from the smallest towns anywhere in the world don't ask small questions because they've been exposed to a larger world.
And do you sense that they also come with, we mentioned interdisciplinary among faculty and researchers, are students looking across the university at ways to link different disciplines together in a major?
Well, they are, and that's back to answering and asking the big questions. They have already figured out that there isn't a small answer to a big question, and that some of these problems, you know, will there be enough fuel to support the lives that they hope to lead? Is it really fair that they have so much and other people have so little? Those are big questions that they know can't be answered narrowly by a major in economics or a major in accounting, although they may want to work in those areas, but they're really interested in thinking about them from a broader perspective.
This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
My guest is June Hewitt. She's a Michigan State University Provost, Chief Academic Officer for the university. Dr. Hewitt, we were talking about sustainability and what kids are now bringing to the table when they come to Michigan State University. I like to use the example, one good example, we have a wonderful recycling center here on campus. I remember President Simon and Vice President Poston on this program saying that probably wouldn't have been there had it not been for undergraduate students.
Well, that's right. And I think that that kind of sense of purpose is just increasing in our students because they really come now wanting both opportunities to explore purpose but to practice. And the recycling efforts, that whole recycling program, did come out of a number of students wanting an opportunity to do this at a larger scale, not just on a dormitory floor. When we look at some of our composting efforts now, a good deal of that has been driven by our students who are interested in thinking about that. And of course, the university's in it in a much larger way, but it's interesting to see how even student groups have begun to pursue this.
Well, you mentioned the composting and the recycling center. Not only are students engaged in actually doing this, but a really neat thing, and Michigan State's been long at this, but some of the research that's associated so that students can actually do work with faculty on research projects as part of their undergraduate program.
Well, that's right. And a growing number of our students begin doing some sort of research in their first year. Because, again, they're really interested in answering questions, not just reading about the questions. And so, of course, that's the great advantage of coming to a research institution, that you're not just hearing about what people have discovered, but you're actually learning the process of discovery. So our students certainly are working both in laboratories, in studios, in fields, and in the places where faculty are actually discovering.
There's been a lot of emphasis on STEM programs, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, I believe. Have you noticed, has that trickled down into the high schools and are students coming, particularly young women, with sort of a STEM orientation, or is that still a work in progress?
Well, it's definitely a work in progress. We're delighted that this year, for the first time, we have 1,000 women enrolled in the College of Engineering. Mm. That's unprecedented and really something to celebrate. we are working very hard and have a whole set of programs that are helping students get a leg up who really are interested in STEM but just haven't had adequate preparation in high schools. We're still struggling with students coming, very bright students, very capable students, but who are coming and are underprepared in mathematics. And, of course, that really is critical in so many of the areas in which the emerging economy is.
Well, associated with STEM and sustainability, we were talking a little bit about this before the interview started. Our listeners might be interested in knowing a little bit about a signature program at Michigan State. It's called the RISE program. Tell us about that.
Yes, the Residential Initiative in the Study of the Environment is not a new program at Michigan State University. In fact, it's into its, well, probably coming close to the end of its second decade. But it has just grown in popularity. It has amazing faculty leadership, amazing commitment by faculty who have championed this program for years. But it is a program that students, we only can admit 70. We have about three times as many students who would like to be admitted. But because it's a residential program, the students actually live together. We do have a limit on the numbers who can be in that program. Not who can take the courses the students take, but who can actually be in the program. The students are attracted to it because they don't want to just learn about it. They want to live it. So they live in a place where the construction of the outside walls of the residence hall are actually a lesson in sustainability. They work in a hoop house. They're involved in a whole set of projects, projects of their own choosing, but projects that are really transforming the campus. So certainly while they're learning principles of sustainability and ecology and community and learning systems thinking and critical thinking, they're working all that out. This year, some of those students were involved in an entrepreneurship competition, and so they pitched their ideas. And three of their ideas that were funded, in fact, relate to composting and a bicycle taxi, among a couple of things. Enterprises that have come out of that include bees now on campus that are producing honey that's being sold, Bailey Bees, a new line of tea that's available at the Kellogg Center. And they're also working on edible flowers that will really become part of the Kellogg Center menu.
Yeah, and amazing. Some of these ideas that are being incubated here among undergraduates as well as our grad students, they may be the next corporation, the next great success story internationally. Like edible flowers, for example.
They may be, and this is the learning ground for that.
Another residential college, and this is kind of near and dear to my heart because of my own personal background, but you have one in the humanities and the liberal arts. And the importance of still studying philosophy and religion and literature and things of that nature as it relates to the whole sustainability effort.
Yes, the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities has a strong sustainability thread through all that they study because they're very focused on social responsibility and issues of equality, and those bump right against these conversations about sustainability. I mean, you can't really talk about what underlies sustainability. You can talk about the science, but you can't talk about the practice without bumping against these larger questions. And certainly in we refer to the Residential College as RCAH. Certainly in that college, I think there's a strong ethical thread around sustainability.
Yes, as you mentioned, just to underscore, you can't talk about things like social equity or social justice without incorporating the humanities into the conversation, although some of the solutions may end up being largely scientific solutions.
Well, yes, but marrying those concepts, again, is what is so important and is what is important here on campus. We have a new minor in the College of Engineering, an energy minor, and you can imagine what kinds of courses you would have in an energy minor, but even those highly technical courses emphasize both the geological and the environmental context of all of those content matters. So it's an interesting trend, wave across the campus in many colleges.
And they, you mentioned earlier, and I want to touch on, I don't want to let this get away, the whole entrepreneurship notion. Entrepreneurship really marries all those disciplines. It's quite a way of manifesting this interdisciplinary, cross-disciplinary approach that you were talking about.
Well, that's right. And it lends itself very well, again, to students who have this particular perspective and want to pursue whatever it is, whatever kind of activity that they have a passion for, but in the context of entrepreneurship. We think we're very well situated here to particularly focus on social entrepreneurship, particularly international social entrepreneurship, which again is related to this whole notion of sustainability.
Absolutely.
And the care of environments. Mm. And I say that because we're not talking about just the physical environment, but the social, the political environment. So we're finding it in lots of places on the campus, and it is being driven by students who come wanting to be part of this.
Boy, entrepreneurship, interdisciplinary study, solving global problems, I guess Spartans will.
Spartans do.
I've been talking with Dr. June Hewitt. She is the provost at Michigan State University. We've been talking about sustainability, entrepreneurship, student leadership, and all things MSU. Thanks so much for being on Greening of the Great Lakes.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment inside MSU Today here on AM 870 WKAR. To read Kirk's blog and hear more Greening of the Great Lakes content, visit mlive.com/environment.
The Great Lakes, inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, how about a student project to build a cabin for Sparty on the MSU campus, but not just any ordinary cabin, actually a tiny house that would embody a number of green building concepts and practices. With us to shed more light on this project are Dr. Pat Crawford. Pat is the Associate Director of the School of Planning, Design, and Construction at Michigan State, also an Associate Professor in Landscape Architecture, and student Tiffany Pupa, who is a senior majoring in Interior Design in the School of Planning, Design, and Construction. Pat, let's start with you. Some of our listeners may be familiar with Tiny House. There's a popular television program. Give us some sense of, when we're talking about tiny house, what are we talking about?
With the tiny house movement, some people may go, if you're under 800 square feet, is a small home. A tiny home, you're really getting into under 200 square feet, so a very small, small space. But what's so important about it is it's about a cultural change and a shift. And it is an international movement into thinking about, how do I have a rich life full of experiences without being held back by a lot of my accumulation. And so that's the core of it. And it's also about all sustainable practices and sustainable decisions. But you don't have to live in a tiny house to embrace the tiny home movement. We can all make decisions every day that help lower our impact on the environment, that are sustainable decisions, that have less waste. Those are all things we can do, no matter what size home we live in.
Not only do you have that dimension of the tiny house movement, but in terms of housing for low-income people, renovation of cities, urban areas, like in problems we have in Flint and Detroit with housing, but there's that whole cultural sustainability dimension as well.
The smaller footprint, smaller size of the home, makes owning your own home become much more accessible to a wider and a larger population. Our next generation of students, with Tiffany as a part of, they don't have so much the expendable wealth that some of the previous generations had. They've gone through the last recession, and so they're thinking differently about how much do they want to invest in a home and a lot and those kinds of things. But it makes it affordable to more people. It also makes it more affordable for empty nesters or seniors to still be able to live on their own in a smaller home that's affordable within their budgets.
Well, Tiffany, let's turn to you now. Pat mentioned how this is popular among younger people in particular, but how did you and your student team decide to embark upon this project to build this tiny house for Sparty?
I'm a part of a student group called United States Green Building Council Students, Michigan State University, and there are a lot of these student groups around the region, so every year we get together and we spend the day learning about sustainable trends, and then we also share what has been successful for each group and what are our goals for the next year. And there was one group that was really impressive to everyone, and they toured a couple of tiny houses, and everyone was really interested. So on the drive back, we were talking, and we realized that we are from the School of Planning, Design, and Construction, and it would just make sense for us to try to build one of these.
Okay, so you guys got together. You were familiar with the TV program. I know that there are some tiny houses in your proposal. There was one in Ann Arbor that you mentioned, I believe, specifically. But from that point on, I mean, this is a major project. You've got to raise money. You've got to expend hours building this thing. You've got to get approvals from all the levels of the university, the great bureaucracy that any university has. So, I mean, it was a big undertaking, and you must have had some moments where you said, do we really want to do this?
Once we got started, there wasn't really time to stop and think if we really want to do this or not. But the students are extremely excited. And to get all of the approvals, Dr. Crawford has helped immensely in guiding us and, you know, showing us the way to do a project like this.
Okay, well, let's get to some of the specifics. I've looked at the blueprints, but tell our listeners a little bit about this house for Sparty. And then, very importantly, once it's built, tell our listeners what you plan to do with it.
The house is going to be a traditional tiny house that's going to be on a trailer. And the reason for it being on a trailer is because in most areas, you can't build a home that's under so many square feet. So this is the way around that law. So it's about 180 square feet, and it has two floors. The first floor, you'll open the door right up into the living room, and you'll look straight back into the kitchen, and there will be a little corner in the kitchen for the bathroom. So it has a shower, a toilet, and everything you need. And there's a ladder that will give you access to the second floor where the loft is. So that's where the bed's going to be, and it can fit a queen-size bed.
I would imagine now the one question that comes to mind, you've got water and heat and all those sorts of things, but the house is on a trailer. So how do you get that infrastructure built so that the house can be heated so that you do have running water, you have electricity, all the amenities that one would expect in a home?
In tiny homes, there are different options. So some people like to go completely off the grid and collect rainwater and use solar energy. However, for our project, we're using, we will have to hook up to a source of energy, and we're going to be using electric energy. We'll have a mini split to heat and cool, and we'll have traditional hookups, but that can always be modified later on. So in the future, somebody could, retrofit a composting toilet or more solar and other options like that.
I'm talking with Tiffany Pupa, who's a senior majoring in interior design in the School of Planning and Design and Construction at Michigan State University. She's also spearheading a tiny house project. Tiffany, in terms of the house itself and living in it and sort of that confined area, I mean, it's not a house that would appeal to just everybody.
No, it is not. So it's very important to realize that moving into a tiny house is a lifestyle change, and you can't just build one and move right into it. You have to mentally prep yourself to do that, and it's really about paring down to what you need and living a minimalist lifestyle.
How many students, first of all, and how long is it going to take you to build this home? And then after you build it, what are you going to do with it?
In the School of Planning, Design, Construction, we have around 500 students available and interested in this project. But for the build, we've calculated that it should take 12 days for us, and that's including an extremely generous learning curve. It is possible that we get it done even before that. So we're looking at a model where we build Friday, Saturday, Sunday from early in the morning to late at night. But we'll be doing that in shifts. So there'll be four-hour shifts with about four or five students and one experienced supervisor and team leader that'll guide the build.
And as I understand it, then you're going to demonstrate the house at places around the country, but then you're going to sell it.
Yes. So, of course, the first objective of building the tiny house is so we can use it as a learning tool. So we will take it around campus and also the greater Lansing community to show these alternative sustainable living options. But then ultimately, our goal is to auction the home. And with any proceeds that we do receive, we'll create a seed fund for the students to do other sustainable projects and then hopefully donate the proceeds to a local charity in Lansing that would help with a housing crisis.
Dr. Crawford, students are so entrepreneurial these days. This is a great example of student entrepreneurship. The Recycling Center was the result of student activity on campus and planning. I mean, what do you see among students these days when it comes to things like green building and sustainable living that this tiny house, tiny home movement represents?
I think with the student group, first of all, anything in the sustainability new lifestyle area is very popular with the students. And as faculty, we have to remember that they come from a different generation. They have different life experiences that are forming their values and their preferences today. And I am just so excited to work with these young people. And Tiffany is just an amazing example of what can be done if you just come in and say, hey, I have an idea.
Very impressive project. Congratulations, Tiffany, and to Pat, and to the entire student team. I've been talking with Dr. Pat Crawford. She's the Associate Director of the School of Planning, Design, and Construction. Tiffany Pupa, who's a senior majoring in interior design in the School of Planning, Design, and Construction.
That was Dr. Kirk Heinze with a sustainability-focused Greening of the Great Lakes segment inside MSU Today here on AM 870 WKAR. To read Kirk's blog and hear more Greening of the Great Lakes content, visit mlive.com/environment.
WKAR.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. To hear this show again, click on the radio tab at WKAR.org and scroll to MSU Today every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock on AM 870 WKAR.